This story starts with a well-dressed businessman, Michael Gates Gill, dropping into the Starbucks on 78th Street in New York. The man who used to run the creative department at J. Walter Thompson, the most powerful advertising firm in America, had been fired 10 years before. His consulting firm was going nowhere fast. It turned out that this particular Starbucks was hosting a job fair that day, and Crystal, a young black Starbucks manager, sized Michael up and started talking to him.
She said, "Do you know retail?" And I said, "Well, what is retail?" She said, "Well, Walmart." And I said, "Well, I've never been in a Walmart, you know?" So I almost lost her there, I think. But I said, "Well, I worked with marketing with Burger King." She said, "Okay, Burger King, you know?" So in other words, she was on my side.
To his own amazement, when Crystal offered him a job at Starbucks, Michael Gates Gill took it. He tells the story in a book called How Starbucks Saved My Life, A Son of Privilege Learns to Live Like Everyone Else. Gill told Ann Strainchamps how he came to be in that Upper East Side neighborhood that fateful day.
My parents had a brownstone on 78th Street on the east side of New York, and my mother had said I should take piano lessons, and my father had, I mean, he loved to spend money. His name was Brendan Gill, and he was a famous writer at The New Yorker, but he loved to spend any money he could on anything he could, and he decided that if I was going to take piano lessons, I had to practice on a Steinway Grand. So he immediately went out and bought a Steinway Grand, and then the trick was that it was a little brownstone, and how do you get it in? And he had a crane hired and put it in the French windows on the second story. But all that sort of visual reminded me that I had such a favored place in the universe, and somehow I had fallen so far, and I didn't know how to sort of jog myself out of it. But I did know I could still enjoy a latte. And I looked around and I saw that in place of some childhood shop, there was a new Starbucks. So I went in and sat down at a table and started to sip my latte. And, you know, I hadn't realized it, but there was a job hiring event or something on. And this young woman having to sit down next to turned to me and said, "Would you like a job?" And suddenly, I think that helped me break through this sense of denial and inability even to say, "Help, help, I'm drowning." And I said, "Yes, yes, I would like a job." You know, because it's one thing to say you want a job, but I never even filled out a job application. I'd had this one of this affluent background and gone to Yale, and one of my Yale classmates had gotten me my first job in advertising. And so I never had to really do all that. But she helped me, and she said, "You know, do you know retail?" And I said, "Well, what is retail?" She said, "Well, Walmart." And I said, "Well, I've never been in a Walmart, you know?" So I almost lost her there, I think, but I think she sensed by that time that I was in need. And she's the kind of person I would never have, she was so different from me in background, education, and everything that I never would have even thought to hire her, because I was always, when I was master of the universe, I'd always like to hire people just like me. And so I was grateful for her. She said, "Okay, is there anything in your," you know, I said, "Well, I was in, worked with marketing with Burger King." She said, "Okay, Burger King," you know, so in other words, she was on my side.
This job was in so many ways wrong. I mean, wrong status, yeah. Wrong salary,
right.
Wrong kind of physical
right.
demands, wrong
right.
coworkers, and yet it turned out to be strangely exactly right for you.
Yeah.
How come?
I have no idea, and basically I'm still in a sort of wondrous mystery, you know, how that sometimes in life I remember one night coming out after closing the Starbucks store and just sort of touching my heart and feeling this level of happiness, which I still have, and I'm not quite sure of why I'm so happy. But I think part of it is, what a relief, you know, Anne, of not having to support this superstructure of status and symbols and on all that big lifestyle of mansions and houses and stuff.
What did you do at Starbucks? Like on your first day at work, when you first showed up, what did you do?
Well, you know, Anne, I thought, you know, as you're thinking about now, I've accepted this job, but it's going to be so far below me, I'll be embarrassed and humiliated by taking it. But as I saw these young 20-somethings running around and calling out lattes and making change on this cash register and also making some enjoyable conversation, I said, "Oh, my gosh, this might be way beyond me." I mean, that's scary.
I can imagine.
Because I was never much very athletic, you know. And I was terrified of money. That's one reason I was there, you know, broke at that age. And so I realized that this is not as easy as it looks. In fact, I discovered it's a lot harder to, you know, create an enjoyable experience for the partners and the guests, you know, making a good cup of coffee than it was to sit around in sort of silly advertising meetings.
The partners and the guests?
You know, words do have power. And we are, even part-timers like myself are called partners. And, you know, in some corporations, I mean, I had helped many corporations write these mission statements about how they love their people, but somehow they never got around to giving them health insurance or, you know, the key things. And even with part-time partners, you're given health insurance, you're given, and for not just me, but all my children, you're given dental, visual, all these things, but also you're given stock. You don't even ask for it. You're given stock and stock options. In other words, you're made to feel that you are partners. You are part owners of this whole experience. And the other thing is an emotional partnership, which is, you know, when I was working in advertising, it was very competitive and that you felt that there was just a limited number of spaces at the top. So you were always competing. So if someone slipped, it was, you were a little sorry, but that was your opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And the beginning of your book, you talk about how for the first several days, maybe even weeks at Starbucks, you were really terrified of the cash register. And
yes.
So you worked it out so that you basically were on cleaning detail for the first several days or weeks.
Exactly.
Had you ever cleaned anything before?
No, you know, that's very, very perceptive, Ed. Sometimes because I worked late, I would cross paths with cleaning ladies, you know, quote unquote, and at home, I never cleaned either because I was too busy, right? I mean, I was one of these people thinking that running around 100,000 miles a year was doing something. And so, it was a new experience. But the reason, you're absolutely right, Anne, I did it out of fear of that register because that was, you know, I didn't want to be put on it. Luckily, Crystal had some cleaning needs in her store. She said she had a grout problem, but then she said maybe it should be a grout opportunity. But there was grout between the tiles, which is sort of dirty tiles, and I spent days on that, and then once she took me over and showed me how to clean the bathroom. And, you know, there's a lot of peculiar discoveries. You know, you sort of lose these things. I found it was therapeutic of me, you know, walk into a messy bathroom and leave it sparkling.
When you were down on your knees scrubbing a bathroom, did it ever hit you? I used to run the creative department at J. Walter Thompson. What would the people who worked for me say if they could see me now?
Yeah, and actually, one of the gifts of this new, you know, world turned upside down and, you know, I never imagined is I began to laugh at myself because it was funny in a sort of a nice way. And also it was funny to me that I actually enjoyed it because it was something I could do. You know, I'd reached the point in my life where I began to feel like I really didn't have any value. I wasn't useful. And whether it's cleaning a bathroom or doing a lot of, you know, mopping up and doing those kind of things, I felt, hey, I was helping my partner. I was being useful again.
Mm. What about once you finally moved behind the counter? What's that like?
That was really scary. But, and it's good news is that, you know, at Starbucks, and I think probably many establishments today, they have this computer on the register which sort of puts up the right change for you. You know, you put in this, say, $20, and they say, give them back $15.23. And then also it comes up for the guests. So, by the way, I'm still making mistakes. The other day, a guest said, "Well, Mike, I think you owe me 17, whatever it was, you know," and as you can imagine, I get talking or whatever.
It sounds like you haven't gotten bored yet.
No, I haven't. Each day is still a challenge. Both, you know, you never stop moving, so there's sort of a physical challenge. And I by the way, I can't say that I leap out of bed at 4 a.m. in the morning or something. To, you know, I more or less crawl. But when I get to the store, say at 5, and, you know, all the partners, and we have a cup of coffee, and then we share some with guests, you know, I don't even notice the activity. But I think it's really good for me because it is so physical and demanding. And then after I walk out, I always feel better because, you know, I've had a good time as well as everybody else having a good time.
Sounds like one of the big things you learned from working at Starbucks is you really changed your relationship with other people. You were working with people who were not like your former coworkers. They'd had backgrounds that were very, very far from yours.
Right.
They were the kind of people in your former life you probably wouldn't even have been comfortable talking with. And now they were your coworkers, and you were kidding and laughing, and you learned how to have fun with a whole new set of people.
Yeah, that was a huge surprise to me because I definitely was the minority in the group. I mean, decades older, et cetera. And I realized these people, you know, this is my minority partners, but they became friends to me. They became people that helped me have perspective. You know, I think maybe that's why today I'm happier than I ever have been, aside from losing that strain of, you know, trying to support this sort of status lifestyle. I think the other thing is the freedom of just saying, hey, I'm just a human being like a lot of other human beings. And certainly I discovered I was no better. I was able to sort of have more perspective about myself.
Michael Gates Gill calls his book How Starbucks Saved My Life. And talk about venti-sized irony. Having decided he likes living in a tiny apartment, working part-time, and having a real life, Michael Gates Gill got a phone call from Hollywood film director Gus Van Sant, who wants to make a movie of his life. And oh yeah, Tom Hanks wants to play Michael.